Wednesday, October 15th. It's a day that I always have to remember. Because wedding anniversary today, Craig. So
you?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. So, well, good for you. Yes, okay. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. All right.
This is great news.
Enough of that. But this doesn't count just because people on Facebook, if they have an account, they'll put something up there. Usually they'll change their profile picture to maybe their wedding picture or something from the past. And then other people will say, congratulations. And you get kind of the buzz that way.
What do you have?
When you got a radio show, you just announce it over the air. And that's
really? Are you changing up your Facebook picture?
I don't do that at all. I have an account, but I haven't really updated it.
Oh, really?
No, I've never done anything to it. I should read the instructions on how exactly to
maybe
do
it's
that.
Time, huh?
I've never quite.
Do you
sure,
have a big bash planned for later? Like a big bash, a activity, a gift, anything special going on?
I don't know. Maybe, perhaps, is that all of the above, none of the above? You know, it's
we can't say on the radio multiple is choice what you're saying.
I haven't figured this whole thing
out.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe my wife would like to read a book about the 30 years of sports writing that Rick Nolan has put together. I'm not sure.
Because
this book is called Overtime, Favorite Sports Stories from the Last 30 Years. Rick Nolan joins us this morning. He's written with the Medina County Gazette. Also, you see him in the Chronicle Telegram as well. Rick, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You know, the stories that you have in here, because you kind of covered sports, but it's more about life, really, in most of these stories. We talked with you briefly when we did the Medina Spotlight about your ideas of putting this together. It's finally come out. Any relief or thoughts about, well, now it's out there for the public to enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, definitely relief. It was, it was a lot of fun to do, but it was also a lot of work. So yeah, it is enjoyable to finally have it in my hands and to get into other people's hands. I've gotten a tremendous response so far from people in the area.
Rick, obviously there are lots of memories here, but how did you go back and choose the top stories?
Well, the first thing I did is I had to decide, you know, what kind of format I was going to use for the book. I ended up dividing it into six different sections: human triumph, memories, personalities, events, adventures, and columns. Once I had that set in mind, I was able to kind of group the stories in each section, and it came together fairly quickly. It was a lot of fun to do. Helped me reconnect with a lot of people I hadn't talked to in many years. Finding the stories wasn't easy, but managed to get them all, hopefully now it continues to sell. It's done well so far.
Do you still have your stories from 30 years ago, a filing system? How does that work?
I had nothing when I started, guys. I had two stories in my possession. One I wrote in 1989 about watching Game 4 of the NBA Finals the night my mom died, and one I wrote a few months after my father's death about drinking his last can of Blatz. Nothing else. I'm one of those guys. People at work will tell you one of my idiosyncrasies is I love to delete stuff off the system. I love to throw stuff away. I can't stand clutter. So I kept virtually nothing. So I started doing this from memory, got some input from other people, and then before I knew it, I had 50 stories.
But as you mentioned, the stories you kept, those are the ones that had a personal connection with you. Many of your stories do that, and I'm sure that the stories that you're thinking of, those people were touched when those stories appeared in the paper. Talk about some of those that dealt with the people, especially in the county that you cover in the area.
Yeah, a couple that stand out. There was a man who coached football and track at Medina High School for many, many years named John Carrick. He had a massive, massive stroke in 1997, was given less than a 3% chance of surviving. They ended up having to remove a portion of his skull to allow the swelling in his brain a place to go. I ended up doing a very long story there based mainly around a very personal diary that his wife Cynthia kept over the months he was going through treatment and surgery. I was able to intersperse thoughts from her diary, which were among the most personal and intimate you could imagine. She shared all that with me. That story came out very, very well. There's another story on a young man named Patrick Sisala who attended Medina High School in the late 1990s, was a member of the football team, was going to donate blood one day when something showed up, and a day later the hospital called and told him he had leukemia. fought it courageously for the better part of a year, but ended up not surviving. That story is written about the memories his friends had of him, also based around some journals that he kept during that time, and a memory book that his high school sweetheart had put together with him for him from, you know, with thoughts from his friends and memories of him, funny stuff. It's a sad, it's a moving story, but it's about life. Death was the reason it was written, but the way he lived was the reason that made the story so memorable. So there's tons of stories like that, guys. There's all the does, the infamous does in Cleveland sports history, the drive, the shot, the fumble. There's some crazy stuff I've done, like attempt to climb Mount Whitney in California, refereeing at Grafton Correctional Institution. There's a wide array of stuff. I think there's something for everybody. And I think the stories, regardless of whether they were written in 1985 or 2014, they've held up really well over time. And I just said over time, so that's the name of the book, by the way, too. 1995. Yeah.
Normally in prison, the referee wear. Normally a referee has stripes, but in prison, what does the referee wear?
We actually wore stripes as well. There was two armed guards in the facility and about 300 or 400 inmates. It ended up being a fabulous time, but I can't even begin to explain to you the adrenaline rush that I had as I walked into the place.
It almost seems like a movie story in a sense like that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been there, but when you walk in, there must have been, you know, 400 inmates crammed into this tiny gym, and the entire length of one side of the court is about a 20-foot-high chain-link fence, and behind that is the workout room, where guys who looked like they could be on the cover of Muscle and Fitness magazine were all lifting weights. The music was just absolutely blaring. There was, you know, at least three guys on the prison team that were 6'6" to 6'9". It was a tremendous experience. I will share one thing, that they had an announcer who was similar to if you guys are familiar with Rucker Park, the outdoor playground in New York City, but it's not so much announcing who scored, but it's kind of like heckling and just having fun with the thing. He asked all the referees for their names before the game started. The first referee was smart enough to just say Pat, and the second one just said Joe. So I followed suit and just gave him my first name just in case I did make a few calls that didn't go over too well. But it turned out awesome. I actually went back again, guys, after I wrote the story, and it had gotten into the prison, and they had all read it. And fortunately for me, they absolutely loved it, and numerous players on the team came up and actually thanked me for it.
Rick, how did that opportunity come to be? Was it for a story?
Yeah, there's a group of guys, mainly from the Medina area, some from the Lorain County area, that have an organization called Basketball for Christ, and it's made up of a number of former college players, very good players, and they tour different players, different prisons in the area, be it Lorain, Grafton. They play in Mansfield. I think they also have played in Chillicothe, Marion, and a couple other places. I knew the guy who had put that organization together, and he asked me if I would be interested in doing it. So I made $25 for it, guys. I didn't do it for free, but it ended up taking 3.5 hours, so the hourly rate wasn't real great. But I did it actually for the experience and for the memory.
Well, $25 for a story that lasts a lifetime, that's a pretty good bargain for something like that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The book is called Overtime. It's the favorite sports stories from the last 30 years from award-winning sports writer Rick Nolan. What got you to take on the best female athletes in Medina County? And what kind of things were you going head-to-head and competing against?
Well, did that story in 2001. That was the year I turned 40, incidentally. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Could have been the first of several midlife crises. I don't know. Probably had a little too much spare time on my hands, but it just seemed like a fun thing to do, and it was an absolute blast. I played one-on-one against Kara Buesen from Wadsworth High School, who was our MVP in basketball that year. I ran the 300-meter hurdles. I wouldn't say running is a very accurate description of what I did, but I managed to get over all the hurdles. I barely could see the girl I raced against by the end of the race. She was so far ahead of me. Played nine holes of golf, and it was not golf either. And that's not a sport I do on a regular basis. Also hit against the best fast pitch pitcher in the area, Tara Ross from Buckeye High School. And actually, guys, on my second at bat, I got a hit against her. We were playing at a field. She actually has a softball field at her home, which tells you how seriously some people take sports. But her friends and her parents and stuff were in the stands while we were doing this. And after I got lucky and got a hit, her mom is on the bench, and she says, "Rick, I just want to let you know, she had a no-hitter going yesterday, and when a girl broke it up, but the batter that came up next accidentally got plunked in the ribs." So I promptly struck out on three pitches in the next at bat. I was leaning so far, my left foot was about going into the third base dugout when I swung. So, wow. Did that. That's a story that was a blast. Got to know kids a little bit, and it was extremely fun to do, well-received. I tried to poke a little fun at myself and not take it too seriously, and I think it turned out pretty well.
You also have a story that begins with a bus trip with a football team. Anybody who's been on a bus with a team, I don't know how long this trip was, but I'm sure there's many stories that you could report on that one.
Yeah, that was the 1995 Brunswick football team, and they ended up making the state finals. I think I did that in their second or third playoff game. They were playing in Sandusky. We had done what happened was we had done so many stories on that team. We were doing two or three a day for the better part of a month when that ride started. And we were kind of, to be perfectly honest, we were running out of fresh ideas. We had written feature stories on most kids on the team. Most of the coaches on the team, and I was just kind of looking to do something different. So I approached the coach with the idea of would he give me complete access to the team, and we're around those people enough that he said yes. Tom Fasco was the coach of Brunswick at the time. So what I did is I showed up, early afternoon, met in the coach's office, and kind of wrote a behind-the-scenes timeline look. From about 1 p.m. till about 10 p.m. It was pretty quiet on that bus ride up. When you're playing that big of a game, there's a lot of nerves, but the kids were playing video games on the way up, the coaching banner. It was interesting to see some of the kids were so nervous they couldn't sit still. Some of them were calm as a cucumber. You would have thought it was a practice in July and not a playoff game in November, but that story, I think, it came out pretty well. It was actually relatively easy to write because it was basically like keeping a journal. But, again, it's something I think that provided some people with a unique aspect into what's said before a game, what's said at halftime, what's said afterwards in the locker room where the media is not normally at during that time.
You've been doing this for many years. As you mentioned, you turned 40 at that one time. You've aged through the years. Does your reporting and your sense of how the stories go and how to keep them fresh and where to look for the stories, has that changed or altered, or do you see a different perspective even by looking back at these stories that you put in this book?
Well, I think in this day and age of like immediate gratification of Facebook, of Twitter, of scrolls across the bottom of ESPN and CNN, there's more pressure to get things out immediately and to be first. But what I've always enjoyed about the job is doing the things that that can end up in a scrapbook or in a frame and have a special meaning to the people I write them about and the people that read them. And I don't think that has changed. I hope it never changes. We all know the newspaper business isn't the greatest business right now, particularly for print newspapers, but hopefully, even if that doesn't survive, there'll always be a place for it online. I think people like to have things they can keep and like to have things they can sit down and read at their leisure and at their enjoyment and really get into them. So hopefully that will continue, and I definitely plan to continue to do that.
How did you get Joe Tate to write the foreword to this book?
I've been fishing out at Joe's house for many, many, many years, so... Had not really thought of what I was doing at that point of the book, and I happened to be out there fishing, and I wasn't catching anything. And Joe came out of the house, and we talked, and I don't have many strokes of genius, but I think I had a pretty decent one that day, and it suddenly just hit me. Hey, here's a guy that's got some name recognition who I've known for almost 30 years. You know, why not? He's lived out here in Medina County for I think 20 years now. So he reads the Gazette every morning. It's the only newspaper he gets. So you know, I asked him. He said yes, and that was that.
Well, you know, Joe, obviously you connect with the Cavaliers. You're reporting on the Cavaliers. Just a little insight into what you expect this season and how you're anticipating covering this unique team that we have here in Cleveland now.
Well, as you guys probably know, this team's going to be pretty darn good. They are extremely talented. I've been impressed with the way things have come together for them. Great players have a knack for doing that. People think it's going to be a huge transition, but when you know how to play the game and you play it unselfishly, like LeBron James and Kevin Love do, and like Kyrie is really showing that he can do if that talent is around him, you have the makings of something special. You add in the fact that the Eastern Conference just still isn't very good, and I think we have a team here that should make the NBA Finals. And you know, quite honestly, guys, they don't want to hear it because they don't want the pressure in mid-October. But if they don't make the finals, they probably will have failed. I expect them to be playing in June. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win a championship, but I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be playing for one. You know, what happens there, I think, depends on their health, how they're playing, and who they play. But I think it's, you know, I've never been this optimistic about a Cavs team, and I've covered them since 1986.
It's amazing what Coach Blatt will get to see when he looks down his bench, even when he gets to the 12th man down on that bench too. So
absolutely. I mean, you know, they have quality veterans, and they have a lot of young talent in Deion Waiters and Tristan Thompson that's still improving and getting better. The most important thing, though, is they now have veterans that are going to show them the way, and they're going to keep them in place. You know, if anybody does start acting up, I think, you know, David Blatt has the ability to turn to LeBron and say, "Hey, LeBron, better if he hears it from you than me. So can you go down there and straighten that guy out?" And I don't think David Blatt's going to have to ask LeBron to do that. I think LeBron will do that on his own. That's just where he's at this stage of his career.
Yeah, definitely a different atmosphere in the locker room from the previous couple of years, as we've heard rumors or reports of what was going on in there. So. That looks pretty good.
Yeah.
The book is called Overtime. Our guest today has been Rick Nolan. Rick, how are you getting this book out here? How can people get a hold of it?
Well, it's available at the front desk at the Gazette Monday through Friday during normal business hours. They also have a few copies of it at the Chronicle Telegram. If you're unable to get to either of those places, you can email me at Noland13@ohio.net. And I will make arrangements to get one shipped out to you.
Well, you handle, you're at a lot of different games and places. You just carry like a little sack or, you know, have in the trunk of your car ready to go anytime.
It's never too far away from me, guys. I can tell you that. I've sold it at some very unique places, at the post office, at restaurants when I was out having a cold one after work. So you never know when somebody might be interested. You know, people come up with you, and sometimes you think they're being nice. "Hey, I want to get your book." You know, and you don't know whether they're really serious or they're just saying that because they don't think you have it with you. So I was like, "Well, I got one in the car if you got $20. So, you know, if they're serious, I run out and get it, I sign it for them, and I give it right there. If they're not, they got to come up with an excuse real quick of why they said that and then why they didn't want it. So, yeah, you want it, I'll get it to you one way or another. 1995.
Rick Nolan, our guest this morning. You can read him in the Gazette as well as the CT on occasion. Thanks for joining us today, and good luck as an author. Add that to your resume, too.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks.